Good afternoon and welcome to The Weekend, a public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And joining us on The Weekend this afternoon are Cesar Huerta and Matthew Manriquez, and they're here to talk about the El Paso Improv League. Thank you very much for being with us here today, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now tell us a little bit about Matthew. First of all, let's start with you because, you know, improvisation is something that I don't want to say it's a lost art because a lot of people perhaps it is because a lot of people depend now on, you know, whether they're reading from their phone, a tablet, teleprompter, whatever. Very few people can do it, and they do it really well. President Kennedy did it. Great job at the his news conferences, and of course Robin Williams and Red Skelton. But you guys have formed a group here in the El Paso area, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. First of all, you know, how did it all evolve?
It started when I was in college here at UTEP, and I went to an internship in Houston, and I went to go see my first improv group with two coworkers of mine. Actually, they were French, and they were like, "Do you know about improv?" And I was like, "I don't know. Let's go." So we went, and I saw this short form show, which is like, "Whose Line Is It Anyway?" And it was cool. It was interesting. Very family friendly. And then right afterwards, they had a show called Ampersand, and it was like adults only. And it was like at 11 o'clock at night, a bunch of young kids showed up, BYOB, and they were doing this really weird performance art. And it was strangely like invigorating, and I just was like, I fell in love with it instantly. So I came back to El Paso, and what I did was I just put up flyers everywhere on UTEP, and I put improv with a question mark, and I wanted to see if anybody knew how to do it. And I met actually the dean of computer science, David Novick, and he did improv in Oregon, and he was doing improv here in El Paso, just out of his house. And so I met him. He kind of introduced me to the world, started giving me books, and slowly I started reading it. I became really interested, and eventually I started coaching it here at UTEP, and it just started bringing together like students that were interested in it, and it became more of like a social dynamics experiment, like how can we get better at many of these social issues that we have, you know, listening and paying attention, give and take, you know. A lot of those things became the real focus. And the improv itself is actually really easy. It's just kind of saying whatever's at the top of your head. But it's kind of knowing how to deal with people better. And that's where it kind of evolved into. And that's where I've been kind of interested in.
I think because, you know, you just mentioned that it's very easy because when we speak to one another, we're doing improv because we don't have anything written down that we're going to, unless, you know, you're in high school and you're calling a girl for your first date and then you hang up real quick. But first of all, I want to ask a little bit about your French friends. What did they think of it?
Well, one of them, he liked the short form stuff, the Whose Line Is It Anyway. But then when we got to the long form stuff, the more underground stuff, he didn't like it. I don't know why. But the girl that he was with, he was dating, she loved it. Like me and her were just talking about it. And I don't know, it was interesting. It was kind of surreal in a way because I would joke with him and say, like, I feel like we're like a revolutionary underground people. Or I don't know, like driving the car and talking. And I wanted to pick up a French accent. But they weren't going to like join and make improv. And I don't know what like kind of encouraged me to do it. It was just like, why isn't this in El Paso? Like, it's bringing together all these young people, and it's really simple. They're just kind of going up on stage without any notes, nothing. I mean, there should be something like this in El Paso. And it just happened to be that in every college, in every, like, almost every state, every college has an improv group. UTEP didn't have one, which was odd. I don't know why. So I made one.
So you mentioned that you put up flyers and you had improv question mark. So what happened at that meeting, that first meeting?
I was really nervous. I remember I went to his house, and David's house, and I was like, oh, this doesn't seem right. Just at somebody's house. And it was some older people that were doing improv. Wow, I can't even remember some of their names anymore. It was like 5 or 6 years ago. And they were just like, they were just sitting on couches, and some of them were just standing up in the middle of the room and just performing, just talking to each other, and being really exaggerative, as you would imagine it would look like in a young improv school, because everyone's like really over the top, and like their gestures and their facial gestures are real crazy, And then I just jumped into it. Yes, and that's the first rule of improv, and kind of like the first rule I kind of think of in life now, you know, yes and life, yes and improv. And that was the first thing I learned. And from then it just started rolling. I hung out with David a lot. So I'd go over to his room during his breaks and talk to him about improv. And he was really good at short form. That Whose Line Is It Anyway style again. Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit more about, because I'm interested in what happened at that meeting. But as I mentioned, Cesar Huerta is with us also. And Cesar is a part of the El Paso Improv League. And Cesar, tell us a little bit about how you got interested in improv.
My girlfriend, she got emailed for another club, a math club, basically. So we went to that meeting, and then we found out that the president of the Improv League was also in that club. So, oh, that's cool. And then he told us how we have meetings, how we have shows during the semester. And he told us about, like, the first meeting for improv. And, you know, we're like, all right, let's try it. You know, we're in college. This is my second year here at UTEP, and you know, and I was just like, let's try something new. We haven't done anything like this before, and we first went to the practice. A lot of people were there, and it was pretty exciting.
So, tell us about, because as you mentioned, and I guess you know, math club is something you can improv, because I tried improv in math and it never worked.
No.
I would flunk the test anyway. But tell us about what you did after that meeting. And have you always been interested in kind of improv? Did you watch shows or did you do it at home?
Yeah, like Matt here, I did watch a lot of Whose Line Is It Anyway when I was a kid. I was kind of surprised that like there was no more. And once I heard of improv, I was like, all right, is it like Whose Line Is It Anyway? I was like, yeah, we do like one of those games. And I was like, wow, that's cool. I might not be a funny guy, but I'm very interested in trying to, you know, reenact what I really liked as when I was a kid.
And Matthew, you mentioned that, you know, I guess when you said that these older people were doing improv on the couch or standing up, our listeners might be curious about, you know, because a lot of times when we say improv, first thing that comes across is comedy.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily that. You have to, you know, whether you're at a news conference, as I mentioned, like President Kennedy, President George W. Bush was not good at improv, but...
In a way, no. He was good at improv comedy.
Yeah, you're
really
right.
Good.
But what did these people do at this? I mean, what kind of when you talk about short form improv, give us an example.
So I could use an example from Whose Line, but I'll start with like the first things from Yes And. Essentially, you'd get up in front of another person and you'd offer a line. You know, I don't like these poached eggs, and the other person's line is supposed to start with yes and. They can never say no, so you never want to deny. And that was it. I mean, from there, you just kind of move on into whatever comes through the natural course of progression of yes and. You know,
and as far as when you perform somewhere, do you have certain skits that you do, different themes? Because I would imagine if they ask you to go speak at or perform at a convention or a meeting here on campus, depending on who is sponsoring it, I guess they would ask you to maybe try and work around this theme or whatever. Let's say, for example, the upcoming presidential election.
Interesting. Well, we can. So usually we get a suggestion from the audience. And if the theme is, you know, the presidential election, we'll probably get a lot of Trump and, you know, Hillary. And then the scenes will turn into that. But usually there's no pre-written skits or scripts or anything like that. We do play games. So, for instance, there's a really famous game from Whose Line? Arms Expert, where Ryan Stiles, he stands up there in a chef's outfit. And Colin Mockery is the arms for him. And he has a bunch of food placed in front of him, and it turns into just stuffing as much food into Ryan's mouth as possible. Now, we do that one, except we don't have food because it's kind of gross and a mess. But we do that game with the audience members. So we'll bring in two volunteers. They'll be our arms. And we did it at the pizza joint downtown for like a year maybe. We also did it here at UTEP for like 2 years. This is back like in 2013. And we're doing it in the Black Box Theater, really underground stuff. And then we started doing it at Centennial, and we just do these games and call out people walking to class and be like, you want to come volunteer for these games? So that's the short form style. And then there's another style that people don't know about. So that was that first thing that I saw in Houston, short form. And then afterwards, it was long form. And long form I consider to be like a performance art almost. They get one word from the audience, and then there's many different ways of doing this. This is a Chicago-based, I would say more like an Armando, if anybody out there even understands what that means. But you would stand in a line and offer monologues, truthful stories based on an idea. Someone could yell that, I think the word that night was medicinal marijuana. And everyone told stories. And most of them were like the first time they tried pot or anything like that. And from there, they went into scenes. They just did improv scenes. And they never start off comedic. They're always very dramatic, very real, almost like acting. And then all of a sudden, it would just flip into comedy, like out of nowhere. And it would be the most hysterical contrast, like that juxtaposition of something real dark, someone trying pot for the first time, turning into the funniest skit of like them like burning all of it wrong or something, you know. And it was just so weird to watch how it would transition, and the crowd was just like in it. We were all in it, and then we would get caught off guard every time. And that really excited me, because I was like, how are they doing that to me? How are they getting me to fall in line with this skit that they're making up out of nowhere? And then all of a sudden, I'm laughing at it, at their own mistakes in a way. And as I started reading more about it, it's actually improv was created for actors, you know, by Keith Johnstone in early days, like Impro. It's a famous book. And they started making it for actors. And it was like a practice so that they can get better at thinking on their feet and all that. And I started reading those things, and many of those games are real weird. Like you'll stand in a room with 10 other people and you can't talk. And then that's it. That's in like do something. And it's like, what? And that's how improv kind of came out in these weird ways. And that scene actually turned into Neanderthals, you know, and they couldn't talk to each other and they fought over the women. That's what that turned into. So like weird, really weird stuff. I started experimenting with this because David knew so much. And once I got to like the limit of where David Novick knew about improv, I started researching my own. I started reading, and a lot of it came through experimentation. So I'd watch us perform, and I'd be like, you know what? We're not listening well, you know, so we need to do listening games. For instance, we do a game called Conducted Story. I like this game. We all stand in a line, and someone stands in the middle, and they point at each other, and whoever they point at has to tell a story. And if they point at someone next, they have to continue that story from exactly where it left off. So it turns into wacky, you know, storytelling. But the truth of it is that you want to get a seamless story. Because if you're listening well and truly in the moment, which is what improv basically is, listening, yes, and play the game is what I've always understood it as. And playing the game is a little bit more in depth,
yeah.
But I like to think about it like whenever you decide to play a game like basketball or baseball, there are rules, right, that you have to follow. And if you didn't follow these rules, we'd be like, come on, man, you know, like you got to dribble the ball. You can't just run. You know? So that would be the same thing as when we go up on improv, we talk about playing the game, and we have to find these rules within the structure of an improv scene. And there's like that in life a lot of the time, you know. You don't go into a place and not introduce yourself, I think. I think it's kind of a weird thing to do. There's like some type of social etiquette to that. We all play games every day.
And, of course, we're on the radio, so people can't see us unless they have one of those radios where our picture comes up. There aren't there. But, Cesar, you are a very quiet young man, or you appear to be. So people might say, well, gosh, you know, Cesar, how did you become involved, or what do you do in improv? Because you come across so quiet, and I guess, you know, perhaps you can give us some tips for people who may be like that. They appear to be introverts, but inside they really have a lot of things to say. And sometimes, like myself, when I was younger, I would use comedy to kind of like cover up shyness or whatever. So tell us about your experience.
Well, my experience in improv does help me overcome that shyness. You know, when I was a little kid, I was very shy, and I try to make conversations, and then, you know, try to punch in like a joke here and there. But improv did help me overcome that shyness by like listening to people, and then later once they're done talking, I'll be like, all right, I'm gonna respond, and that's good, because you know you want to listen what people say, and then you can come up with what your response would be. And yeah, I'm a pretty shy guy, and I know I'm pretty quiet sometimes, and it's still a work in progress still. But in the improv scene, you have to overcome that right away, because then you're in stage, you're going to just gonna be that quiet guy, and then you'll end up being the game of the quiet guy. Is like, why is he not talking? I don't know what's going on. And
what's funny is Caesar is like probably one of our best improvisers, easily, and he performs all the time, and he makes the funniest things, and he's not quiet on stage. And I think about it as like that it is that listening and responding thing, like, because I'm a person that talks too much.
No, you're a very good talker.
And I think Caesar is a good like
listener,
and also he helps me like remind myself like, shut up, like, what are you doing? Like, because I could talk all day easily.
And I would imagine that Caesar sometimes would probably add in some subtle lines that, wait a minute, oh, that was a joke, or were you serious? And sometimes that can catch people by surprise. And as our mothers warned us, it's the quiet ones you have to watch out for.
Yeah, sadly. Yeah.
So how has that affected your relationship with your girlfriend, or even, you know, being at home with families? Because, you know, unfortunately nowadays our families, you know, whether we sit down to dinner, if we sit down to dinner, people are looking at their phones, tablets, something else. And sometimes, you know, that quiet, it becomes very, because, I mean, silence is
kind of awkward.
Awkward, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, once I started improv, I realized that I need to start talking more. And with my family, I'm okay. Like, with my family, I go and interact with them because they're my family. Like, you go and interact with your family.
But are they very talkative?
Yeah, they're all pretty talkative. You know, they're all
girls.
They're all girls, yes. I am the only boy, yes. And then they're all girls, you know. I'm pretty talkative. If we have a conversation, we communicate a lot with my girlfriend, which now I guess is my fiance. So
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. My fiance. I was pretty shy around her. I already told her that I was shy around her, but it's like, you know, time goes on and you start to get used to that person. Just like I got used to Matt. You know, and you get used to him, and you start talking more. You start laying, I guess, yourself out more, I guess. And then, you know, expose yourself to that person.
Expose yourself.
Hopefully.
Come out of the shell.
Yeah, yes. I guess come out of your shell more. And you know, like, the family issue with me, it's not big. I do talk to my family. But if there's new people with my family, I'll try to communicate with
break
them
the ice somehow
as best as I can, and it's good.
We mentioned at the beginning about the El Paso Improv League, and you mentioned about the putting up the posters and the flyers. So tell us a little bit about the club here at UTEP, and you know, there are students out there or teachers, staff, who may be interested in taking part of this.
That's true. It can be anybody. We had somebody who's a director in El Paso, not affiliated with UTEP. He just came to do it because he kind of needed to get his improv fix. I think about it. Caesar is actually the president of the Miners Improv League here. That one's called the Miners Improv League.
Miners Improv.
Yeah.
And then El Paso Improv is a different one.
And then it kind of evolved as we all got better and we wanted to start like playing at different places across El Paso. We all agreed that we didn't want to bring UTEP into the affiliation to playing across El Paso, so we became the El Paso Improv League. So anytime we play off of or perform off of campus, call it El Paso.
And how do you guys go ahead and get booked for shows?
What kind of shows? The people that I meet just ends
up. It's just word of mouth?
Yeah, it's total networking. You know, like I met somebody and then it like leans into I do shows at the Pizza Joint. I do shows at Lowbrow. I do shows at, you know, open mic series, Barbed Wire open mic series, Richie Marufo, you know, things like that. And then we just end up doing them.
There's that place on Mesa. What is it? The Black Orchid, I think it's called.
Yeah, the Black Orchid Lounge.
Yes. So they have open mic on Tuesdays or something like that. And are you able to do something like that there? Or?
We did it a couple of times, actually. It's a little weird because we take longer time.
And they
want 5-minute, 10-minute sets.
Okay.
So when they host us, we do like a 30-minute set because improv kind of needs to – it kind of needs to roll.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's this weird thing that as like you begin talking to somebody, you know, in the beginning there is that awkward, you know, feeling, breaking the ice. And improv is the exact same way. The audience is so used to stand-up that they feel like the stand-up is against them, like make me laugh, funny guy, you know, that type of feeling. But improv is the exact opposite. Like we talk to the audience first and say, like, what do you want to hear? What's on your minds today? And then we perform scenes based off of that and we create a connection that's different than a stand-up. Stand-up wants the audience to buy in. We want to form a connection with the audience. And once we form that connection, it takes time. Sometimes you won't form the connection until an hour later. So we get like true belly laughs where they're in it. Like when you stop talking, there's silence. Like I love that feeling, that tension. Otherwise, it isn't there. So if it's a 15-minute set, like it's going to be bim bam, you know, really boring stuff as an improviser looks at it, you know, because there isn't real no connection being built.
And, you know, as a stand-up comic, if you don't have improvisational skills and if you do have that silence, you're going to feel horrible. I mean, those 10 minutes up there or whatever are going to seem like, you know, 3 hours or whatever.
Well, some of the best stand-ups, they know how to work the tension. They know how to work it. I mean, Louis C.K. just sits in tension a lot of the times. He just boom, tells a joke and then just kind of stares off into nothing and let it come down to base level. And then he riffs into this. Nothing that he says in the beginning is funny. He's just setting you up for his joke, right? So he's using that tension, which I love. And it's kind of improv based in a way, like, because you need that rhythm. We were talking about rhythm of conversation the other day. You know, it has to have a rhythm. You know, like I love the way Spaniard people talk. Like they
in Spanish
or Spaniard no. themselves, yeah, in Spanish.
Como hablan
así. Yeah, I can't do it well, but I'll just like the da 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 da. You know, they accentuate the end. Or Italians do the same thing. You know, like this is Parmigiano.
And you know, I'm glad you brought that up because sometimes, like in my voice acting class, we talk about dialects and stuff, and sometimes. Depending on what region, it could be somewhere here in El Paso or another part of Texas, New Mexico. They have a sing-song rhythm or something, you know, in northern New Mexico, they talk like in da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, and even in English they talk, not just Spanish.
Yeah.
So now let's talk about a little bit more about the Miners and the UTEP Improv. So in case people want to know more about it, is it kind of taking a hiatus for the summer or are you going to start meeting in the fall? What about that, Caesar?
Right now we're going to probably be having meetings in the fall mostly because there's like everyone has their schedule in the everyone has plans for the summer and we're like let's have practice this day and then you know they're like I'm out of town blah, you know complicated stuff like that. So we are going to have practices in the fall. We are going to reserve a room at the Union. I don't know if it's going to be the same room, but we had one at Barry 316 last semester. So that was a good time because that was the first time we reserved a room for any practices because we used to just perform. We used to just practice at the Union stage. What is that?
Yeah, it was just Union
the outdoor
stage.
Thing.
Yeah, the outdoor thing in the state, which is a good idea because you know people will see it, it's like, oh look, it's nice. But then like, we would like to, I guess, be more organized, I guess.
Yeah.
And be like, meet us here, and then we'll be there, and stuff like that. Now, like, meet us at this outside place, but we might be somewhere else, too.
Weather conditions.
Yeah, weather conditions. Yeah. And then,
Matthew, what about, you guys are still operating year-round.
Yeah.
So if someone is interested in perhaps attending one of your meetings or becoming part of it, do you all meet on a weekly basis, or how do they find out more about that?
So right now you can go to Facebook, El Paso Improv League. We also got a website, elpasoimprovleague.com, which is brand new. I'm offering a new class coming up June 21st, I believe. And that one's not affiliated with UTEP, but I'm really focused on social dynamics at this point, you know, using improv to actually gain better communication skills. And that one's going to start June 21st, going to go every Tuesday, every week. I haven't decided how long it's going to be because I'm still working on the curriculum, and I do it at spare time, you know, that's outside of the job. And that one, it's going to be outside of UTEP at a party hall. I'm going to be renting out a space there. But that one you can see on Facebook. We have it listed, El Paso Improv League. And at the same time, I'm coaching an advanced workshop every Sunday. Caesar in this advanced workshop where we're trying to perform a new style of long form. And that one we're planning on bringing to the El Paso main stage. It does take time. You know, you have to build that rapport with everybody. And you also got to teach the new people how to do this crazy stuff. Because that takes time, too.
So you mentioned earlier about, Professor David Novick, the fact that he turned you on to a lot of books and stuff. So if people go to the Facebook page or your webpage, are there links there to find out more about, like, perhaps some of these books, like the one you mentioned by Keith Johnstone or anything like that?
I haven't put the Keith Johnstone stuff, but I've been really into a book called The UCB Manual to Improvisation.
The UCB manual.
It's the Upright Citizens Brigade. People born in the early 80s might remember this show from the 90s on Comedy Central and Bravo. They were the first improv group that kind of made it to the main stage or mainstream media. And Matt Besser, Amy Poehler, Ian Roberts, Matt Walsh, you know, they were all part of this. And they came out of Chicago. They created a school in New York. And they took a lot of ideas that a really famous improviser named Del Close, like, was very abstract. They took them and wrote them down. So now there's like a structure to this really abstract idea. And that's what improv has always seemed to be, really abstract. And it seems it needs, you know, a formulation of a structure and a curriculum. So they actually wrote a book on the way that they teach at their school. And I've been really interested in it lately. And I've been teaching based off of that because it's a really good structure. And I've been adding my own social dynamics stuff as, you know, as I've gone across and seen what works better and you know, what could kind of puzzle piece all these things together, you know.
Okay, well, Matthew and Caesar, we've run out of time, and want to let people know that we did not have a script. We were just talking here without notes. But give us again the webpage or the Facebook address if people want to find out more about this.
Facebook.com/El Paso Improv League and ElPasoImprovLeague.com. Or is it EP?
EP Improv League.
EP Improv. No, EPImprov.com. We also own...
You know, you guys are improvisation.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We also own EPImprov.ninja. So,
by the way, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, yeah, that one's just for fun.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. We could have talked for a long more time. Perhaps we can bring you guys back, especially when the semester starts. Yeah. But we've been visiting with Cesar Huerta and Matthew Manriquez with the El Paso Improv League and also the UTEP Miners Improv group here on campus. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right, thank you.
The Weekend is taped and produced at KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Evan Walsh. Our producers are Lauren Terrazas and Eddie Rosales. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.